The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We are bringing you another episode of Clown Takes, and we've certainly got some heavy hitting candidates this week to bring you with a little bit of news about the Red Sox hiring a certain consulting group. We're going to be harping heavily on that in this episode, so should be a good one. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. With me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass., is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm excited, Jason. I have an opportunity here to bag on management and ownership. Really looking forward to it.
We all know how much you love doing that. Yeah, for sure. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. How are you, Terry?
I am good. It's getting hot down here, and Jeremy's probably, what, 300 or 400 miles further south than I am. Well, probably further, actually, but...
Yeah, that only gets me to Jacksonville, Terry.
Okay.
You're probably like 600 or 700 miles. We're midsummer down here. It's going to get a little bit hotter, but it's already midsummer here.
I think I'm 5 hours from Jacksonville, but yeah. And I've mowed my lawn for the second time, and... I swore last fall I would have a riding lawnmower finally this year. This is the third summer, I guess. But we got to replace our HVAC, so I'm stuck pushing it, I think. But it takes me about 2 hours to do the half acre that my house sits on. But yeah, so I did that today, but luckily I don't feel cooked after doing it. But
yeah, we're still in the late spring tease phase up here, where it's, you know, 70 degrees during the day, and then by 6 o'clock it gets down to 55 and it's raining and windy. So
have the leaves come out yet or no?
Yeah. We've actually seen some green. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's an important.
Right. I can't believe you guys are still doing that to yourself.
No, Jason, Jason's a winter guy
down here, Terry. We cut the grass year round.
Oh, do you? Oh, screw that.
Yeah, if it really gets going, you could go twice a week on cutting the grass, and it's only once in the winter.
Oh, no, twice a month. That's all I'm doing it. And yeah, but we in South Carolina, surprisingly, you don't have to do it after late September. And then by late March, it gets kind of gnarly and you have to start mowing again. But yeah, but speaking of cooking, we're going to cook the Red Sox here.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, there was a pretty big announcement, I think, from the Red Sox this week in terms of hiring the Sportsology Group to conduct an audit on the Red Sox front office. So I don't think a minor thing. A lot of people may have brushed that off, but I think a pretty significant piece of news. And Terry, I know that you want to lay into them about this, so the floor is yours. Go right ahead.
So I've said over the past several months that, you know, we've all been unhappy with the roster. And I always say all the smart people are long gone. They've long left for other organizations, and none of the smart people wanted anything to do with the Red Sox as far as executives last winter. So the Red Sox this week via Alex Speer of the Boston Globe announced that they will have an audit done by the Sportsology Group that Jason mentioned. And apparently this has been underway for the last 2 or 3 weeks, which makes me wonder, were they trying to keep it secret and then it got out? So now Speer comes out with the article. Not sure. But here's a quote, and this is from Breslow. And just for the record, I'm clowning the entire organization. I'm not clowning Breslow specifically, but this is his quote. He says, "We're using an outside consulting firm to help me wrap my arms around this operation. It's big. It's grown a ton in the last 3 or 4 years. And with that comes the need to understand, who are our people? What work are they doing? Is it..." I'm just going to stop there. So he doesn't know his people. And at the top of the article, and again, this is from Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, Breslow oversees the entire baseball operations department, which includes hundreds, plural, hundreds of front office members. And so with that many people, that's a massive collaboration for all these last place finishes we've had. I mean, it sounds excessive. It doesn't sound like Breslow has any idea as to who people are. And I think what's going to come out of this audit is, you guys got to downsize a little bit. You got to simplify everything. Things need to be streamlined. And how did it get to this point? When Theo Epstein won too, a couple decades ago, that had to have been a small front office. I'd be shocked if there were more than 20 or 30 people in there. And that's when we were winning. That's when things were good. So it's been hard to make sense of the last few years. And the fact that they're hiring this Sportsology group, which probably isn't baseball people specifically, they're bringing in a bunch of non-baseball people to tell the baseball people what to do. It sounds like a circus.
So I'm curious as well, in terms of, you know, him mentioning that the front office has hundreds of people.
That's what it says.
That's not accurate. I hope it's not accurate, because most MLB front offices, when you talk about like the really top guys who are actually the decision makers, it's like between 5 and maybe 20 at the most, but hundreds. Like, so that's where I think maybe Breslow just misspoke, right? Maybe it's just more, he was counting people that, you know, weren't actually that high up, whatever. But then when you move on to the Sportsology group and you look at their track record, so they haven't worked with a baseball team yet. Their accolades include working with the San Francisco 49ers, the LA Rams, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Mavericks, and the Washington Wizards. So 3 football teams, 2 basketball teams. And most of those organizations have done pretty well. They're playoff contenders. They're, you know, they're high-ranking sort of teams. Until you get to the Washington Wizards and you go, oof, that's part of your resume? The Wizards, who haven't been relevant in how long and hand out bad contracts to overrated players? Like, okay, that's not great. So it's more just like, why are you bringing in a group that has never, at least from what we've seen, has never worked with a baseball team to audit your baseball team? And it really just kind of shows, like, so again, between Breslow saying there's hundreds of people that he's got to audit and then bringing in this group, it's like, it's kind of showing Breslow's maybe a little in over his head. And I don't put that on him, by the way. I don't, because I think that he's brand new at this. And I think that he's just, him doing this is his way of trying to like kind of get back on track or trying to keep up. Again, I put this on ownership. It's like, what the hell's going on in your front office that you have this many people that Breslow can't make heads or tails of, and he's got to hire an outside consulting group to make sense of it? Is that how disorganized your front office is? Is that how disorganized your whole franchise is? I think that's kind of the case. Because again, Fenway Sports Group, you know, they keep expanding their profile. They bought the hockey team. They've got the Roush Racing team. They've got Liverpool. They brought LeBron in because they want to put a basketball team in Vegas. Like, so they've got their fingers in so many different pots that I think they just kind of, the baseball team and that front office just got totally discombobulated to the point where Bresso walks in as GM, whatever his title is, and he goes, "Who the hell are all these people? Like, I know some of them. I know some of these people why they're here, but like, what about the others? This doesn't make any sense." So I see this as Bresso just doing his damnedest to be like, "I've got to clean this up because this is a mess. And it's a disorganized mess that the ownership group has not paid attention to." And, you know, he probably was like, "Hey, you guys, do I have to go ahead to do this?" And they're like, "Yeah, whatever, do whatever you want." He's probably like, "Thank God, because can like this group, can you guys come in and like just get rid of anyone who doesn't need to be here and just tell me what to do here? Because it's been a jumbled mess for a couple of years. We've known that." And it's just kind of embarrassing that like it's gotten to that point where your ownership group is so detached and so just out of touch with the reality of running a baseball team that your GM, who just got here, is like, "I need help. I need a group to come in and audit this mess because that's how bad it is." So it's a little bit foreboding, but I hope that it works. I hope that it works out well, and that, you know, maybe the Wizards was like their one sort of, okay, yeah, we didn't do a great job there. But the other organizations that are on that list, those teams have done really well. They've gone on to like perform, and they've gone on to kind of reevaluate and reshape their franchises to winning franchises. So if that's the result, I'm all for it. I'm just curious to see how it's going to work.
You guys know this has been done in a comedy, right? Where they bring in an outside consulting firm that knows nothing about the consulting they're doing.
Office Space,
Two Bops. And they don't know what to ask, so they say something like, "So what is it you do here?" You know, because they don't know to ask, like, "How has ticket sales improved in the last 12 months versus the previous 12 months?" Or, you know, the things that you would ask the ticket people versus the marketing people versus, you know, game day people versus baseball ops versus business ops. Like, it doesn't. Anyways, so here's my thoughts. Number one, this is in fact a common thing. It is, right? Like, law firms, for example, hire consultants that come in and they tell you how you can improve your internal operations. They can tell you, "Hey, this software is better than this software." They can tell you this marketing strategy works better than this marketing strategy. Whether you implement it or not is ultimately your decision. So maybe the Wizards just can't get out of their own way. As to Breslow doing this, it's embarrassing for sure. But if he really truly feels there's issues within the organization, I'd rather him do it than not. I'd rather him address it rather than ignore it. Now, a couple topics that we've touched on that I don't see the same way. Number one, the hundreds of employees. I don't think that even I have a full understanding of what the front office means, right? So if we're just going to stick to the Red Sox, sales, ticket sales, they're running Nesson, merchandise, game day operations, statistics and analysis, scouting, big league, minor league. I mean, all of these, and I could go on and on, but I'm not. So all of these things could result in reasonably, you know, quite a few number of employees. The other thing that I don't know that I'd want to know is the Boston Red Sox front office, I'm using my bunny ears, responsible for running other business ventures of John Henry's portfolio? Because I think that would be relevant here, right? If you found out that there was a Liverpool, a Roush Fenway team, a Pittsburgh Penguins team, that would make a lot more sense to me personally. Because one of the things I do know is they brought in Theo Epstein to kind of overview all of it. Like, he's not there to focus necessarily on the Red Sox, which, by the way, sucks. So I see it a little bit both ways. Here's where I start to have the issue. Given the status of the roster, given the way that they couldn't find a general manager that even wanted to take the interview, okay? And we're talking about people that have never been president of baseball operations that would, for all objective reasoning, would want at least interview, wouldn't even take an interview. Then you take Alex Cora's situation and how much of a dumpster fire that's ultimately going to be. We want him. He doesn't want us. He's still sticking around, going through the obligation of completing his contract. It's just such a dumpster fire that this just magnifies, because it's another paper stacked on a bunch of other papers that all have embarrassing situations written all over it. So the fact that it comes out the way it does is embarrassing. The fact that, if without digging into it, the fact that you're having an outside consulting group coming in to oversee your baseball operations when they're non-baseball people, embarrassing. We don't actually know what they're tasked with doing. You know, so for me, it's just a continuation of ownership, which is dictating what management does, just having a rolling dumpster fire down Mass Ave. It's just ridiculous. I would have much rather this been kept behind closed doors. Do what you have to do to improve the organization. It's just another point to just laugh at them. And, you know, the funny thing is that it happens when we're actually finding some success on the field. So it detracts from what I think we should be focusing on, which is an episode we recorded earlier, is we've been winning. And I think we're set up to maybe win the next series against the Twins. And instead, there are a lot of people, because this was on sports radio today in Boston, which I listened to. This was a topic, and it's embarrassing. So, you know, they can't get out of their own way. I liken it to LeBron. LeBron, to me, transcendent athlete. I'm not going to take anything away from the basketball player. But I always wondered, because he's 40 years old, he's been in the league for 20 years, I always wondered if there were the right people in his ear telling him, hey, this is stupid. Hey, you know, doing this is stupid. And so if you only have yes people in your corner, you start to believe, you know, that your bleep don't stink. And I don't, they're obviously avoiding media and the general consensus out there in the public, because this is like a my bleep don't stink move, where they don't get it. They don't get the actual perception of the fan base. So, you know, it's just a continuation of the bleep show that's going on. And now with that said, I hope it works.
So Sam Kennedy was on the Nesson set yesterday pregame, and he talked about it. And I've been looking for quotes. I went back to try to rewatch it, but if you have MLB TV, you can't go back and watch the pre-show. But the general tone of him talking about it was he was making concessions. Yeah, we need to be better, you know, in the front office, and things haven't been great the last few years. And the one thing we saw from Kennedy all winter long was a lot of fluff, a lot of, you know, a lot of him pushing a narrative that just wasn't what the reality was for where the organization was at and what the expectations were for this year. And I think it's gotten to the point where he's tired of giving those quotes. I think it's just easier for him to be honest and not take the backlash for what he said. And Tom Caron, I mean, he's not there to grill Sam Kennedy. He's going to give him, a lot of easy questions that aren't going to put a lot of pressure on him. So that was an interesting thing. Getting back to Breslow here, Theo Epstein was actually on Tom Caron's podcast a few days ago. And apparently Breslow, according to Epstein, calls him up to a few times a day. So lots of communication there. It sounds like Breslow is somewhat insecure in his role. And I know he's new at it, and it was an opportunity he probably didn't expect to get. You know, many of us in September thought, man, everybody's going to be gunning for this Red Sox job, only to find out nobody even wanted to talk to the Red Sox, as Jeremy pointed out a few minutes ago. So he's a guy that looks, from the outside looking in, he seems kind of insecure and not really prepared for it. And like I said in the last show, I think this pitching has overachieved. I don't think we're as good as our record necessarily has us. But so it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to watch this all unfold.
So the Breslow and Theo dynamic can go one of two ways. Theo is clearly, by ownership, not involved with Breslow. Assuming that, which I don't think is a safe assumption.
Well, he did say in the article, he makes none of the decisions. He's just there to guide Breslow.
I trust absolutely nothing that ownership does. So they can say what they want.
No, so Theo said that. Just to be clear, this is what Theo said.
And Theo is now an extension of ownership, in my opinion.
Okay, fair enough.
But and I could be wrong, Terry, but they haven't done anything to make me trust them. So I don't trust literally anything. So assuming that it's bifurcated, right? So Theo's running, Roush, Fenway, doing that. If Breslow's calling him for input and Theo is keeping an eye on at least big league talent, I don't have a concern if the reason we signed Cooper and Smith and some of the more recent things are a result of Theo's input. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't trust it. So then I go to my other side of it, which is the bad side of it, which is imagine you're a first-year head coach in the NFL and they hire Belichick to come in and be some mysterious part of the organization. How does that not play on your psyche about where you are within the organization? It has to. So, you know, I hope it's the first situation. I hope the position, the lines are drawn clearly. There's a bifurcation of authority. And what Breslow's been doing is at worst done with his own fruition, with consultation from Theo. Now, getting back to the idea that they hired this consulting group, it only works if they're there to ask ownership questions too. Because, and I don't want to be duplicative because I can do that. I know I can do that. But if they only manipulate front office personnel, find some fat to trim, that's not what we're looking for. Because if ownership is still acting in the way they've been acting, it's not going to improve. So I would hope that this is in part ownership, in part Breslow decision, meaning at least Breslow, you know, seemingly came up with the idea and went to John and said, hey, John, you want to pay for this? And they said, we'll do it, but only if we get to evaluate and give the same feedback on the front office as we would the ownership. If that's what's happening and ownership is willing to listen, I have a ray of hope. Now, I don't think that's what's happening. I think this is an ownership tact, like everything else they do, that is to point the needle away from themselves. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some press dump, you know, in the middle of Felger and Maz on a slow Thursday, where they make significant changes, where they maybe even lay off people, which would be, it's not something I'm a fan of. I don't want people to lose their jobs, but they do some sort of shakeup. It's ownership saying it's not us. It's these people we just fired. It's ownership. It's 100% ownership. And at best, if they feel the need to do it and the consulting group says this is something you should do, it's still ownership's fault for being in position to have to hire the consulting group to then go fire a bunch of people. And it's not going to change anything with the budget for the big league club and where the state of the franchise is, where we have a coach that doesn't want to be here and a GM that's the GM because he's the only one that would take a goddamn interview. So, again, one of the things I said is I'd rather seek the help than ignore the issue. Well, it can't be in part. It has to be at ownership as well. It has to be. And I have no doubt that ownership will not be a part of the audit.
And the sneaky thing about it is you mentioned it's, you know, one or the other. It could be both. It could be that ownership wants to look good and saying, yep, no, we're people have accused us of not caring. This is us trying to care. We're going to bring in this group. You know, Craig wanted to bring them in. We agreed. Let's clean it up. Let's do better. But there's the other side that's like you said, they want to point the fingers at other people. They want to have layoffs. They want to clean out the front office. Say, oh, no, it wasn't on us. It's not me and Tom. It's, you know, this guy, you know, some no name who was in the front office for, you know, the last 10 years. And, oh, yeah, it just wasn't quite living up to the standard. Because the thing you have to remember, and again, like, this is where our distrust of the front office comes in. Who broke the story? It was Alex Speer. Alex Speer writes for the Globe. Who owns the Globe? John Henry.
Yeah.
So it's like this, if this was something that ownership didn't want, there's no way Alex Speer gets to break that story. Because John Henry goes, no, you're not writing that. Nope.
Great point.
Yep. Put that I mean, back Jay, in the
that's,
desk.
That's, I'm a little bit upset. I didn't think of it, Jason, to be candid with you.
It's just one of those things. You get so used to this ownership group and the way they operate and the way that the Globe operates that, yeah, they're hand in hand. So my guess is that ownership absolutely wanted this to come out, and they're probably trying to play both sides. It's exactly that. They, you know, if the consulting group comes in and they have to do layoffs, it's, well, see, wasn't us. It was all those guys. Wasn't us. You know, just, yeah, we hired some bad people. And then, you know, if they do well and the consultant group says, oh, no, everything's good here. And, you know, the team keeps winning. They go, oh, see, everyone.
That's not going to happen.
Probably not. But, you know.
So if they lay off people arbitrarily to move the needle away from themselves and onto these people that are losing their jobs, shame on them. Shame on them. That is just. You want to get me fired up? Use scapegoats and ruin lives and alter families. You know, because we'll hear it. We'll hear some guy that has to go on Twitter, you know, like these ESPN layoffs where it's like, hey, it's been a great 35-year run. You know, I'm part of this week's layoffs. And like they're only 50 years old and they still have 10 or 15 years left of earning as part of their career. Like no one talks, like goes up to those people 6 months later and says, where are you at with your bills, your debt, your house, your kids' education? You know, and like, I don't have a problem if it's for a valid reason. I don't trust ownership. We're already seeing it. And now with the point with Alex Speer working for the Globe's owned by Henry, it's all lined up to be exactly what we think it is. So it's altering people's lives so that some billionaire can blame the issue on other people and treat their lives and their financial well-being like, you know, monopoly houses. It's ridiculous behavior, and it absolutely pisses me off. It absolutely pisses me off because that's what's going to happen. I guarantee it. What a scumbag piece of shit this guy is. Really.
It seemed like Kennedy in that interview I was referencing, you know, it seemed like there was a little bit of embarrassment there. on his part, because he oversees a lot of this. You know, Breslow strictly the baseball ops side, but Kennedy looks at the business side and everything, and he's Breslow's boss. So he seemed to be a little bit embarrassed by it. And if you look at his tenure, his first 3 or 4 years, Red Sox in the playoffs, win a championship, it all goes downhill after that. And here we are. We're having an audit done after no team in Major League Baseball has been destroyed and criticized by the national media more than the Red Sox. And no team has failed to... Yeah, exactly. And no team has failed miserably to try and control its own narrative. That's why I said Kennedy's not even trying anymore. He's just in surrender mode. He's just trying to get through it. He's probably hoping this will yield something, but it has to be embarrassing to do this. And John Henry, Dan Shaughnessy, I don't know how you guys feel about him. I'm a big Shaughnessy guy, but he said a quote a couple weeks ago. He said, "The Red Sox are extremely arrogant for a team that finishes in last as often as they do." So, I mean, the fact that this is happening is just embarrassing. And having a guy that works for the publication they own, they were able to craft this story to their liking and to try to get ahead of it. I mean, could you imagine if Jeff Passan came out this week and said the Red Sox are doing an audit because, you know, things are out of control? The optics would be way worse.
So again, they don't have people in their corner telling them. Sam Kennedy does not tell them, "Hey, John, you're a moron here." The best leaders have no men, people that say no to them in their corner. They can't have it, Terry, because some of this is just so ridiculous. And part of that is they're business people. Consultants entering businesses happens all the time. It's a very usual and customary thing to happen. Now, the customers don't find out about it, right? It's internal. There aren't news leaks. So John Henry's like, "Well, I own 15,000 businesses and I've had 14,000 of them audited. So, you know, this is normal for running a business," but it's different here. It's different based on the conduct of ownership over the last 6 years. They don't see it. So here's the only positive way that this thing turns out. The consultants hand in their report. There's a cover page. They turn it over to find out that the report is one sentence. And that sentence is, "Sell the team." Because this is an ownership problem. It's an ownership problem. It's not a Breslow problem. It's not a Cora problem. It's not the players' problem. It's certainly not our problem as the fan base. There is one consistent problem. And that is that piece of shit, John Henry. I keep forgetting I can't swear. My bad.
No, you can say shit. It's the F-bombs and stuff.
I've avoided that.
You have, and I appreciate that. We'll just see how this comes out. One interesting thing to keep an eye on is if there are layoffs, and I expect there to be, quite frankly. I bet they shrink their staff by at least 25%, I would say. And
why else include the number of employees? You don't think that was done for a reason?
Excellent point. Yeah. Excellent point.
Why is that even relevant? How's the number of employees even relevant to whether you're running your organization properly or not? It's not. It's not relevant.
Well, one of the things I hope that comes out of it is lots of leaks on what's really gone on the last few years. Like, if you want ownership to come out of this looking worse than before, that's how it happens.
Well, it won't be the Globe.
No,
I was gonna say don't.
Who's gonna stand up against John and his buddies?
Well, Shaughnessy works for the Globe, so and he takes shots at him all the time. So I guess he would be the hired gun. But it wouldn't have to be. I mean, Ken Rosenthal loves destroying the Red Sox. They could leak it to him.
They still got to get to the information. The thing that I like, and I don't ever like people losing their jobs, ever. Do not sign non-disclosure agreements. If the employees are listening, do not do it. If you're going to do it, you better do it. You better say, I'll sign a DFA, but it's going to be for like $2.5 million. Do not just sign a DFA to get a severance package of one month's pay. Don't do it. Go sell your story to Passan. I mean, anybody. I'll pay for it. I don't got John Henry's money, but I mean, I could throw a couple bucks at the thing and make a name for myself. We could build our fan base by just absolutely blowing the thing up. You know, and I honestly, if I'm a journalist and I find out Bill Smith worked there for 32 years and has been summarily dismissed because of this stupid thing, this audit, I would call that guy and I would say, please tell me what's really going on.
And it could happen, and I hope it happens.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to take, because even Shaughnessy, like, yes, he works for the Globe, but yes, he is one of the more sort of, he'll take hard shots at ownership, but, you know, he's had health problems, and he's still kind of just tweeting from his couch right now. Like, I feel like they would just find a way to get to him to put a muzzle on him. It's one of these guys, if there's a lot of layoffs, one of them has to just go to Passan or Rosenthal or something. Be like, look, here's what's going on.
Well, so Passan and those guys, they operate in a gray where they're playing both sides of it perfectly. This needs to be somebody that wants to make a name for themselves. And look, Shaughnessy will, you know, growing up, I used to love reading him in the paper on my dad's porch on the Cape, because it was always entertaining. It was always a little louder than everybody else. But like, this isn't criticizing the team because they held on to Bobby Dalback too long. This could potentially be organizational shifting allegations, dereliction of duties, cutting money for profit over the team's success. That's a little bit different than Shaughnessy, you know, criticizing, you know, Heim Bloom for, you know, something, which, by the way, if it's Heim Bloom's fault, it's not John Henry's fault. And that makes ownership look better. So I don't always trust Shaughnessy. I don't dislike Shaughnessy. I do find him entertaining, especially in his young, you know, when I 90s and 2000s, where he was at his peak. But the whole thing smells. And I distrust everything until proven wrong.
And the one thing I will say about this whole consultant group and whatever is that, like, if this was Brezel's idea, and whether he got ownership to really sign off on it, or whether they were just like, yeah, whatever, we don't care, it's still more assertive than anything Heim would have done. And you've seen it with the moves he's made. And, you know, again, I'm not telling you that like Garrett Cooper, Dom Smith, and Zach Short are, you know, the difference between the Red Sox being in last place or being a wild card team, but it still so shows some sort of like, you know, dedication, assertion to the role, where he's going, no, something's not right here and we need to fix it. And he's not just going to sit on his hands. So I think that speaks well of Breslow in terms of he's definitely new at this role. He's still kind of finding his way. Obviously, you know, coming into Boston, coming into this team, this franchise, the way it's been, he has a lot of work to do. But he's trying. He's actually trying different stuff. And he's, you know, again, like the guys he's picked up, Dom Smith, like Garrett Cooper, Zach Short, he just paid cash. He didn't give up prospects. It was all for cash considerations. Like, yeah, you want some money here? Give me a player who can play first base and not be a joke. So I like that aspect of this story, that like it seems like Breslow, even though, you know, if he's in contact with Theo on a daily basis, okay, I still don't have a problem with that. He's new at the role. He's trying to find his space within the role, but he's also reaching out to someone who's experienced at it. And he's saying, okay, like, this is what I think I want to do. Let me get your thoughts. Let's, you know, whatever. Like, I'm still good with that. So if anything, as much as we hate how this looks on ownership and, you know, add it to the list of things that look bad on ownership, for Breslow, I don't hate it because I think it shows him he's really trying. He's really trying to be like, I'm going to try and fix this. Like, I'm not just here to build up my resume. Like, I want to fix this. So I think that's a good sign.
So I completely agree. And look, at the heart of this whole thing, do you blame a guy for taking a position no one else wanted because it was going to potentially advance his career? Like, I don't think it was a good decision for him. I think he should have waited, and he was already projecting to get, you know, leap forward in his career. Instead of waiting 5 years, he took a shot now. I don't blame him for that. I also like the fact that he's trying, because Chaim Bloom would have just sat on his hands and would have he would have made some moves, but then he would have optioned them to double A because they were double A prospects. He's at least taking a shot at guys that have had success in the major leagues. And I know what he's doing. He went to ownership and was like, look, guys, I need $25 million and I need Teal, Meyer, this prospect. Here's my goal to try to improve the roster. These teams, Miami has 8 wins. Colorado has 7 wins. The White Sox blow. Like, there's already teams that may look to sell. And ownership's like, are you kidding me? Look how profitable we are. So instead of mailing it in, which Chaim did, he's taking flyers on guys that have had success. And, you know, I don't think this is a spoiler alert. Some of them aren't going to work. But what happens if he hits on even one and we don't have to see Dahl back again, or we don't have to see Emmanuel Vasquez again, or he finds a bullpen arm that hits and we all of a sudden have the seventh inning figured out? Like, I like the approach because I know the other approach, asking management for assets to actually go spend some money and improve that way, has been poo-pooed. That's been nixed, voided. It ain't happening, guy. So this is not a Breslow issue. In fact, currently, and this is subject to change at any moment's notice, I'm a Breslow guy.
I still...
Don't shake your head at me, Terry. What a little thing that was.
I think it's early. That's a hell of a proclamation in early May in his first year, but...
But he's not Chaim and he's trying, and we know he's handicapped. See, with Chaim, there was this cloak of like, we're not handicapping you. That's gone. Oh, this is Chaim's business model. This is Chaim's approach. This is the devil rays. You know, this is... No, that's gone. We know. We were set a budget. Then we found out he couldn't even get to the budget. Like, we know what's going on. So if Breslow's the guy that actually had the balls to take the job and work with the limited resources he's being provided with, at least he's trying. At least Dahlback's now down. Vasquez is down. And, like, I don't know that any of these guys are going to work out. I don't. But at least let's roll guys through until we find a hot hand. That's okay. It's okay given the status of our roster. It's not okay generally.
Yeah, I just, like I said in one of my earlier takes, he just reeks of insecurity right now. And
I don't blame him.
There was a lot of things over the winter that could have been, like, Jansen could have been traded. There was pathways to do it, and he couldn't execute that. I could probably come up with another couple examples.
I don't disagree with you, Terry, but don't you wonder if ownership handicapped them there too?
No, I don't think so. The handicapping was just adding payroll, which wasn't going to happen. I think he could have moved any of the existing contracts. I don't think they would have stood in the way of that. So we'll see. I mean, he's going to be here for 2 or 3 years minimum. And if things turn for the better, it could certainly be a lot longer than that. But I don't like where we're sitting right now. I think it's an embarrassment. There's no smart baseball people around outside of Epstein, really. And it's been a long time. This is a different type of league now compared to when he was, you know, widely considered to be the best executive in Major League Baseball.
He'll get in the Hall of Fame as an executive.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not, I mean, he reversed two curses, but he's not, you know, what Alex Anthopoulos is right now. And, you know, I don't think Dave Dombrowski is sitting through any audits in Philadelphia. So we'll see.
We need to move on to Jason's clown take, but that's not a fair comparison because ownership absolutely 100% supports the product on the field in Philadelphia. We've talked about that.
But it's a good product, and
I agree, but that's partly because ownership isn't meddling with what Dombrowski wants to do.
Right.
I mean, look at the good franchises. Ownership supports the management that supports building a roster, which spends money.
I don't disagree with that.
We have an ownership problem. I'm going to be a Philadelphia Phil. I told you my business partner is a Philadelphia Phillies fan, so I follow them, and I'm going to be a Phillies fan by August. I can guarantee it.
Who I've rooted for the last couple of Octobers.
Yep.
Yeah, they're so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
They are, and that's the thing. Like, we absolutely have an ownership problem. And the one thing I will say is that, you know, Terry, you said that Breslow has a lot of insecurity. I agree in terms of he has insecurity in terms of you can tell that it's his first year, like, really at the helm. And you know, he's reaching out to Theo. He's trying to get different opinions. What I will say is he does not have Bloom's insecurity of making moves when he needs to make a move. And it, you know, again, like, half the roster is on the IL. He didn't sit on his hands. He didn't say, you know what, Bobby Dalbec for 2 months? Yeah, that's fine. We'll just do that. He went out and got Cooper. He got Dom Smith. Again, they're not great players. They're okay. But they're serviceable MLB veterans who give you more than Bobby Dalbec can. I'm sorry. We know this at this point. He went out and got Zach Short sucks at the plate, but he's a good defender. So he's made moves that, like, he's been proactive in saying, like, no, we're not tanking. Like, I'm not going to sit on my hands. Like, and I made the point earlier, but it's true. Like, all he did was pay cash to these guys. He didn't give up prospects. He didn't get over his head and go, oh, I'm going to panic and give up a top 20 prospect for a player just for a rental. Like, that's the thing Bloom would have done. And that's why Bloom didn't want to do it, because he would have been pressured into a panic kind of move like that. I do like that Breslow, even though he's new, that part of it, I feel like he's very secure about, like, no, you know what? I'm not going to go prospects, but I will pay cash for veterans who can play every day and can be serviceable, and we'll piece it together that way and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to teams and saying, look, you're not going to play this guy.
Exactly.
He's making $750,000. We'll take the contract.
Yep.
Here's, you know, some nominal amount of money for very wealthy people. Like, just give us the player. Yeah, sure. We have no plans to use him.
Well, let me say this about Cooper. He could have signed with any team. And if there were any other teams, I doubt he's picking the Red Sox over whoever else it was, unless it's obviously the Rockies or something.
Well, so here's where I disagree with that, because where are you going to find a contender that is going to get innings at that position?
Well, that's true. And the Red Sox, I mean, well, I can't really blame the Red Sox, because we weren't thinking Casas was going to miss a huge chunk of the season. But first base, typically, as I've said very recently, is a very easy position to solve for most teams. Like, there's a solution.
Not the Red Sox.
Yeah. So, you know, but I don't know. I don't know that Boston is where you're going to revitalize your career. I mean, it's a circus, and right now things are going well, and we'll see how that holds up. I mean, it's only going to get tougher from here.
So it's not about revitalizing their career for some of these guys. It's one more year, right? Like, he doesn't have a Cooper, for example, I don't think has illusions of hitting 30 bombs and getting a 2-year, $20 million deal. I think it's like every year he's in the bigs is another year where he doesn't have to work. So, you know, and by the way, I never blame the athlete for trying to stay in and looking for the right spot. Never.
So, yeah. Garrett Cooper's a guy who, you know, he's 32, 33 right now. Like, he was wasting away in Miami for the last couple of years. So he's not a guy who's, you know, chasing championships or anything like that. Same with Dom Smith. Dom Smith was former top prospect of the Mets, and they messed him up. Ended up with the Nationals last year, like played most of the games at first base for the Nationals, but you know, that was a team that was rebuilding. So, and he's 28, his career's not over. So yeah,
he's not in good shape, by the way.
Well, I don't think he ever really has been.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't look 28 and he's not in shape. I'll say that.
Yeah. But it's, you know, again, like, take a shot on those guys. They're just looking for one more year. They're just looking to kind of keep getting at bats and, you know, stay in the game. So I credit Breslow for at least doing that. It's more than Haim would have done, because Haim would have sat in his hands, said, oh, no, you know, we'll be okay with, you know, organizational depth, which is a load of crap, as we all know.
Yeah, that's done wonders for us.
Yeah. So I give him credit for that. And, you know, again, like, back to the main point of like this consulting group, it's just at the end of the day, if they clean it up a little bit and they make the job easier for Breslow and for this new wave coming in, that's all for the better. Let's just hope that's the case. Cause again, like, I'm not really sure what the motivation is behind it and what it's going to turn out, but it's certainly fair to question. And that's why we're here to do it, because, you know, there's a lot of fans out there who would look at it and go, oh, great move. It's, you know, that's dynamite move. But we're sitting there going, hold on a minute. There's some questions to ask, and we're here to ask them. So
before we wrap, I think Breslow might have jinxed himself here. Tell me if this sounds eerily similar to someone else. He says, this is the last quote of the article with Alex Speer. Breslow says, I think when we have this efficient, effective baseball operation and we're putting a competitive team on the field every season, one that vies for postseason and deep postseason runs, it's all going to be unbelievably rewarding and worthwhile. That sounds just like the Haim Bloom, it's going to be awesome, which was quoted almost as much as the Full Throttle. So hopefully he didn't Haim himself there, but we'll see.
It does sound very much like the just wait for 2026. You know, Mayor Anthony Teal, it's coming. The championship years are coming. Yeah. Yeah. And well,
Dick Fitz will be the opening day starter.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So, thought this was a clean show.
No, that's his name is Richard Fitz. He's one of our top pitching prospects, but we're not going to let him get away with being Richard, you know, in Boston. No, that's just never going to happen. Yeah.
No.
If Dick Mountain was a thing with Rich Hill, there's no way.
But yeah. Well, with that, we will wrap here. If anyone was curious, I was going to go after Pete Abraham. I didn't think it was worth it at this point, because it's just, you know what? I'm going to have plenty of chances to go after him. It was just him mentioning Mookie Betts again. He'll do it again, because Pete Abraham's very predictable. So, no, not worth it for this episode. I'll save him for another one. Don't worry. So we will wrap on that. Keep an eye out for the recap of the Minnesota Twins series. I'll be coming your way Monday morning. And we will see you guys next week. Everyone have a good weekend. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.